Welcome to the Body Competence Podcast, exploring what it means to be and raise body competent humans. I'm your host, Michelle, and I can't wait to share today's episode with you. This week on the pod, I'm talking to Ashantis Jones about taking the anti-fatness out of fitness and what movement can look like for everybody. Ashantis is trained as a therapist and has worked in a variety of environments from college counseling to corporate America. She is also a certified personal trainer who has been leading group fitness classes for over 10 years. Ashantis has been a role model for me, and her world-changing work on embodying an anti-diet mindset is something that can benefit everyone. You can follow her on Instagram at IAmAshantis. That's IAmAshantis. Let's dive in. Welcome, Ashantis, to the Body Confidence Podcast. I am so glad you're here.
Hi.
There is so much that we have to talk about. So I really just want to dive right in.
Let's go.
I think I found you on Instagram. I don't know if somebody shared something that you had done, if you showed up on my Explore page, but I just immediately connected to your content about movement. And one of the things I absolutely love about your work is the way that you have, as you say in a recent reel, decoupled weight loss and exercise.
Yeah.
Which is something that diet culture for a while owned movement,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think a lot of us are trying to learn that we can have the, we can take back that joy for ourselves.
Yeah.
So what does that mean to you? And is that a natural mindset for you to embody, or has there been a journey for you to get there?
Oh, definitely not natural. Absolutely a journey. So to give a little bit of background for folks who don't know me, I have my master's in counseling and I studied clinical mental health and then college counseling and student affairs. So I am trained as a therapist. But in addition to that, I also am a NASM certified personal trainer and have been teaching some variation of group fitness since about 2012. Took some time off for college, but since then. And so when I first started with fitness, because obviously that came before my master's program, it was definitely all weight loss focused, 100%, because I think, like anybody else, especially in that era, because that was like the Biggest Loser era.
Oh, man.
That I assumed that in order to be healthy, you had to be thin, period, point blank. And what I noticed, particularly as a Black woman, was that I was like, Black bodies are not inherently okay, is what I thought to be true at that time, because I looked at myself and particularly the women in my family, and from both sides, everybody had curves. Everybody either had a bigger chest or a bigger bottom. Like, everybody had thighs, you know. Even men, like, my dad's thighs are, like, massive because he used to be a football player. Like, you know, so it's, like, just a part of my genetics. But I always thought that there was something wrong with that because everything in the media, everything a doctor said that that was incorrect. So it wasn't until I was in recovery from an eating disorder that I realized everything that I knew about health was incorrect. Just about everything. I'll say.
Yeah, so that's like 7 or 8 years. Am I getting the timeline right for you? Like,
Yeah, because I got diagnosed with my eating disorder in spring of 2017.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was a bit, and then even then I would say that I wouldn't say that I really felt recovered until like a year or so later than that, simply because even in the beginning of my recovery process, I was just like, oh, well, now I have to eat clean and then everything's fine. And then I was like, wait, that's also a load of bullshit. So hold on, we've got to take some time. So yeah, I was like the weight loss girly, just like everybody else. And then I realized how much of what we knew about health really was also intertwined with anti-Blackness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, wait a minute. I have done the work and the research and looked at the history to realize that a lot of the things that we know about black people, black bodies, is all racism.
Right.
So could the health things also just be an extension of that? And when you read texts like Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings, you realize that is absolutely yes.
Yeah.
That anti-fatness is so deeply rooted in anti-blackness. And so I was like, well, wait a minute. If all of this is correlation science and racism and all these other things that I know I don't agree with that are inherently against my values, could it mean that a weight-centric model is just unethical? It is just incorrect. And again, through more research, I found out that that was true. And so what I had to realize specifically on the fitness side was that you're right. Diet culture does not own movement in the same way that diet culture does not own nutritionally dense foods, right? Like people assume, oh, well, you're eating a salad, so that must be because of blah, 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 blah. I'm eating this salad because it's hot outside. I want something cold. It's going to allow me to get the food that I want and it tastes good because my salads are not boring. Like, that's why I'm eating a salad. In the same way that doesn't matter why I'm eating a plate of French fries. In the same way that actually, if you ask any dietitian, they'll tell you that having the salad with the fries and a Diet Coke, which I know is like all of my friends' favorite meal, is really freaking balanced. So, or regular Coke in my particular case. I'm sorry, Diet Coke girlies, but I don't like the way that it tastes.
I know. I also need the caffeine. I need caffeine.
Yeah. I'm like, I just don't like it. But yeah, no. So it took me a while to really get there. And I would say, you know, I had to intro my way through intuitive eating, through Haze,
Health at Every Size.
Yeah. And do a lot of work around the ways in which those modalities maybe were not completely intersectional to all of my identities. And what I finally landed in was to be a weight inclusive practitioner. And I think that that allows me to take from what I have learned and grain it with things throughout fat liberation, because that is so important to me as well. Because, you know, at the end of the day, being a trained therapist, I do believe that if everybody can have access to health, that they should have access to it, right? And that they should enjoy life too, right? And that, like, health is different for every person. My health status is never going to look like yours, is never going to look like my brother who I share the same genetics with. Like, all of us have different versions of health and what health is for us, but that, like, I absolutely know that the body, there are just certain things that have been through time and time and time again throughout history that have said that movements are, isn't that the body is meant to move in whatever way your body is able to move.
Yes.
And, you know, that I think is, that has to be nuanced, right? Because there are some folks with disabilities that don't allow them to move their bodies, right? So that is something that you have to keep in mind when talking about these things. But I'm saying for people who have the ability, do it. And you can do it without weight loss, and you can do it without the intention to be thin, and you can do it without wanting to shame yourself. You can do it without your body needing to get smaller. You can do it without metrics. You can do it however you see fit. And movement does not have to be in a gym. It can be gardening. It can be taking stairs.
Which is also why environment is so important, and why environment and space is a social justice issue, right? Because more people need access to gardens and green spaces and places.
Yes.
Like, if people deserve space to move their bodies.
Yes.
In, right? They deserve space, safe spaces. They deserve clean spaces.
Yes.
And so movement is a social justice issue. I also did really quickly want to back up to something that you said about how what you were learning about the history of racism, of anti-blackness, of anti-fatness, and how the point of those things was to take people out of their bodies, right?
Yes, 100%.
If I am a white man and I can I mean, it's power, privilege, oppression. The goal is literally to disempower people, to disembody people.
Yep.
To create a power structure. And so through, you know, what's been happening the last 15 years, the last 10 years, the last 3 years, mm-hmm. more people are getting into their bodies. And that's what we want in the universe to make the world a more just place, right? The more people who are inside of their bodies, the more just our country, our world will be.
100%. And I think that that's the thing that a lot of people, you know, I know that I have been called every name under the sun by people who look like me, by people who don't look like me, because I've had the unfortunate experience of going viral on the wrong side of TikTok more than a few dozen times. And have also been targeted specifically a couple of times too for people that are, you know, just want to spread hate. And what I feel like a lot of people don't realize is that when you live within a society, and our society is that of a white supremacist society, the purpose is for us to all feel so disconnected from ourselves that we spend all of our time arguing with each other about what's right and not right so that people can take away the rights we do deserve while we're not looking.
It's distraction.
It's distraction. It's all distraction. And when you look at bodies in particular, right, what the ideal body is has changed so much throughout time.
Tell me that is not a distraction technique.
Yeah, exactly. And like it only got worse once we got to like the 1900s, because then the ideal body started changing every like 10 years. And so if, you know, you're 70 years old right now, you've seen the ideal body change at least 7 times in your lifetime. And it's gone from be small to be not small, but you need to have curves so you look like a woman, so you don't look like a boy, but also do this, but also do that, but also do that. And also, it's only circled really around women, right? Not to say that that body image issues are not a thing for people who identify as men. That is not the case. Body image issues are an issue for everyone. But the main narrative has been centered around women or AFAB bodies, and is bullshit. And it's just an extension of the patriarchy. And that's just an extension of white supremacy. Like, all of it is just white supremacy. All of it. All of it. And so when you like have that moment where you're like, well, I sure shit don't agree with white supremacy, so then why would I agree with all of the extensions of it? That just simply makes no sense.
Yeah. And then taking ourselves out of it is like layer by layer by layer.
Right.
Of just like sloughing off this onion of like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And like, without giving too much away, I did see the Barbie movie last night.
I haven't seen it yet.
That's why I said, without giving too much away, there are conversations about this constant back and forth, specifically, again, speaking about women, AFAB folks, of you need to do this, but you need to do this, but you need to do this, but you need to do this. And it's all in contradiction to each other, but also both are right, but also you can never be enough because you are a woman. How does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense, but that's the point, right? The point is for us to be spending our brain space to be thinking about this, and also to be using our spending power
right
on this.
Right.
Right. The number of products that are sold so that we can achieve whatever the ideal is this year. And I mean, do you think that the quote ideal body has changed more quickly in the last 5 years due to TikTok, social media?
You know what?
Or that there are different like genres of quote the ideal body?
Yes. Yes. And oh my gosh, great question. So layered. That's the thing I also want to make sure people know. All of this is so nuanced. It's so nuanced. It's mm-hmm. so nuanced. It's so nuanced. And all of this also, like, as we're having this conversation, is particularly an American perspective of this. And I try to be very as clear as I can in a lot of the content that I make, that I am coming at this from the perspective as a Black American, because that is the identity that I hold, right? I don't know. It's like, this is the ideal body for people who have this identity. This should be the ideal body for people who have this identity. But also, all of those things still are intertwined and wrapped up in what the ideal body was for white women hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And hundreds of years ago, those women weren't even in charge of their own bodies. So we're still just following all the same rules from what, some white man from a long time ago?
Yeah.
That man don't pay my bills.
Yeah.
Why is he relevant? Why are they relevant? Right?
Was it Trisha Hersey who was talking about how we were like living in a white man's imagination?
Probably.
And that minister? Or
yeah.
Somebody big and influential was talking about how, like, we are living in the imagination of a white man. How do we move into a different imagination? Like, how could we move into the imagination of a Black woman? What if we started living from that place?
I don't think people would. I think people will malfunction.
Well, that's because of our programming, right?
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so, like, I think that if I were to even say to some of my, you know, closer friends that are not Black, like, live today as you would through my eyes, I feel like, though they are folks that have been doing their work, that they would be like unable, because I think that while I should not have to be strong, while I should not have to be resilient, I have been building the skill of letting shit slide quite literally since I was a child.
Okay.
The first time I experienced racism was in the first grade. And that was the first time I knew I was experiencing it, right? It probably happened before then. So because there is that, like, you don't have that built threshold, I feel like most people would just not even know how to deal. They would be like, this is just too heavy. This is just too hard. But from that same perspective, and from that questioning, it's like, well, if you think that, then why do you still want me to suffer? Why have you not done the things that you can to make the changes that you can? Because that's like the hard part of it, right? Is that silence is complacency. It just is. And is that a individual moral thing? It is, right? Because we as people have the power to make change. But so often we're like, I don't have the power, so I can't do it. But when all of us go, I don't have the power, I can't do it, nothing changes. Versus if all of us said, wait, I do have the power, and we can make this change, then things do change. And we've seen that happen in history. But to go back to what you were saying, we are constantly being taught to be distracted. And if you're constantly distracted,
we're taught to be distracted. And we're also taught to not have a sense of self-efficacy.
Oh, 100%.
In some of these things. Because if I believe that I can truly be effective, the patriarchy, white supremacy, capitalism, they don't want me, they survive because I am a cog in the wheel.
Right.
Right. And as I start believing in my own efficacy, as I start speaking up, as I start using my platform to call out systems, I'm like trying to pull myself out of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts slowing down.
Yes.
Right. So there's so much literal millions and billions of dollars that are invested in us being distracted. And this was something, I don't know how you thought about this, but I'm on Threads. You know,
yes,
this. I love your Threads. But I think Threads is a distraction.
Oh, yeah.
I think Threads is a billionaire making an app for all of us to run to the newest shiny object so we stop paying attention.
Oh, 100%.
rethreaded a bunch of this stuff on like the second or third day of threads. It like breaks my heart that like there are now new data farms that are being built. There's now new environmental justice issues that are popping up immediately because of fucking threads.
It is a distraction. It is. And I think that's where we have to like step in and say like, okay, yes, we acknowledge it's a distraction. So then how can I use this as a tool for good? Mm-hmm. Right? Because like, one of the things when Elon Musk first bought Twitter and all of the things started happening, particularly within the disabled community, there were so many conversations about how like Twitter was a form of communication for people that didn't have other forms of communication, right? If we're going to have a new shiny object that's pushed in all of our faces that people are going to, then okay, I'm going to use it to talk about these same exact things. And I know that some people were like, I want threads to be like the one place that can be like a silly, goofy time. I want to say that what is his name?
Mozeri.
Yes. Was Mozeri even said that.
Was literally like, this is not going to be a place for politics. And we were all like, you want to go down. Like,
right. This, like my being is political.
Yeah, there is no being here without politics.
Right. Like, I would love to have a silly, goofy time. I don't get to have a silly, goofy time, though. Because if I have too silly of a goofy time, guess what? Somebody is still going to come for me. And I've had that literally happen. Right? I'm with all of my friends. We're having a fun time out in the city. We get stopped by the police. Guess who's the only one that's being talked to?
It's you, isn't it?
So it's like, you can't be like, let's just have fun and everything can be fun when I am trying to have fun and then somebody makes it political because they've made my being political. My identity as a Black person is exactly my being as a Black person, my being as a woman is being policed, my being as a queer person is being policed, my being as a disabled person is being policed. How am I not supposed to have these conversations and have these thoughts and think about these things?
I mean, it was honestly like a very typical comment, right? It was a little bit too on the nose.
Very.
For a white man, millionaire, billionaire, what I don't know what Mozeri is, who is giving a new shiny object to the masses, right? He's like, here's this shiny object. Use it the way that I want you to.
Mm-hmm.
And not the way that y'all are going to.
Right. Exactly.
So.
It just doesn't.
Well, this actually segues perfectly into, I mean, we're talking about looking at bodies through an intersectional lens. One of your identities is as a person with chronic illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering,
yeah,
if you could talk a little bit about how fibromyalgia, among your other identities, has impacted your relationship with movement.
It definitely has impacted my relationship with movement, especially because, you know, I have been having symptoms for a very long time. Like probably since high school is really the earliest that I can remember. And I did not start the diagnosis process, though, up until I had stopped over-exercising because I was, like, now within the recovery process. But I was having trouble literally walking upstairs, and I was also the thinnest I had ever been. So I was like, the weight wasn't the problem.
And why do we have to get to that point before our health is taken seriously?
Exactly. And so I was like, I don't care what tests you got to run, but y'all got to do something because the weight wasn't the problem. You said not exercising enough was the problem. No, it wasn't. You said, like, none of those things were why my body was aching, why my knees just did not want to be functioning knees. And that diagnosis process took a while because the thing about fibromyalgia, for people who don't know, is, like, it kind of becomes one of those things where, like, you have to rule out everything else before you can get that diagnosis. So I had to, you know, get all of the x-rays and get all of the blood work and all of these other things before we could land there. And it really was like, you don't have X, Y, and Z other things, so this is what it must be. And at the time, I was teaching 15 classes a week, and I was working at Solid Core. and which like is an intense Pilates style strength training for folks who aren't familiar. And I was just like, I had gotten comfortable with being okay with not being able to do things, but then to like finally have that diagnosis of like, this is what it is, and these are the things that you have to do to help manage it, and blah, 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 blah. And it was just like, I don't know. And now I feel like a sham. Now I'm like, I'm a fitness instructor, but like my body doesn't even, it can't do all of the things that most, especially certified personal trainers can do. And then I had to take a step back from that to be like,
had your body been doing the things, or like, what was your experience of your body as a fitness instructor, like the day before the diagnosis?
Mm-hmm.
Because I know, like, I still remember my diagnosis day for narcolepsy. It was, like, one of, in some ways, the best days of my life because I, like, finally had an answer to what had been happening.
Yep.
And it wasn't like, oh, this is invisible. Michelle is lazy. Michelle is, you know, all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So what was, in, like, the month leading up to that, you were a fitness instructor. What did it look like?
Yeah, I mean, it just was like, at that time, I just knew that me and my doctor both knew at that point that I had some type of chronic pain condition. We just didn't know what it was yet. And so I was somewhat practicing under the, I guess, idea that like I had a chronic pain condition of some sort that wasn't an arthritis of some sort, which is what we thought it would be, because I've had family members from baby toddler all the way to elderly be diagnosed with some form of arthritis. So I just kind of like, I don't know if you felt this way before your diagnosis, but you like sort of act as if you have the thing before you've gotten the diagnosis, or you sort of make the accessibility or accommodation for yourself beforehand. So I was like, I was making the accommodations for myself, but I guess once I got the actual diagnosis, I was like, people don't have fitness instructors that are chronically ill. Like, that's not a thing. But then I was like, but wait, why is that? And I was like, oh, well, the reason they don't is because people tell us that if your body doesn't work 100%, then your body isn't enough. But I already know from doing all of the work that I've had to do on the ED recovery side that that's not true. So we're going to dump this into the bucket of white supremacy bullshit and try to keep moving along. And so the thing is, though, I think that I do a better job of explaining this and encouraging this to clients and to folks who come to even like my group fitness classes than I do to myself. And it was actually a conversation I was just having with some other personal trainer friends yesterday, funny enough, where I talked about the fact that like I want to be able to get back into lifting and enjoying that, but then also this like swing of I don't want anybody to be pissed at me if my body possibly changes, but then realizing that that's literally my message and that it doesn't matter if your body changes. So then I'm like, no. And also reminding myself that like, even if I have to take a break from the thing, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't do it, right? Because there are some days truly where I kind of forget, and those are more rare days, but there are some days where I kind of forget, and then there are the days where like I can't get up. And so on those days where I forget, it's okay.
Yeah. And you want to be able to enjoy the days where you forget.
Exactly.
You don't want to feel like those days are going to be held against you.
Right.
Like, I don't know, for me, I will have every now and then a day where I don't take a nap. Like, I'm not as deliriously sleepy as I am on all my other days. And I will be able to get out and do all of the things. And I don't want, like, the next day for someone to be like, but yesterday you didn't need this.
Right. In the same way that some people use other accommodations things. Like,
right.
There are times where I'm like, I feel like I need a mobility aid,
mm-hmm.
versus there are days when I don't. Right. And it's okay that there are some days where I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if you...
It's not one or the other.
It's not one or the other. This stuff is not linear. And, like, the way that it exists, like the way that it impacts our body is not linear. I don't know a lot about fibromyalgia, but I know that for me with narcolepsy, and I lead a peer group for pregnant people and parents with narcolepsy. So I talk to a lot of other people with it. Mm. And if you talk to a group mm-hmm. of women with narcolepsy, they will swear up and down that their cycles impact their sleepiness. But if you talk to a neurologist, they're like, oh, but we don't, like, there's no way. But there have been approximately zero.
That's because there hasn't been any research done.
Exactly. Because it's expensive to do research on menstruating people. So
yeah.
It's just.
Right.
It's. I know in my bones that my sleepiness fluctuates throughout the month.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to be able to be present every day and not hold those good days against myself, not kick myself on the bad days, it's really hard. It's really hard. Do you ever feel like you're just...
Yeah.
And then to have a social media account where you're trying to show certain things. Do you ever struggle with that presentation?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But then what I realized is that, like, it's all internalized shit, like, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. Right? The mm-hmm. days where I'm like, oh, well, I can't do that. It's internalized ableism. Right? Mm-hmm. Or I'm feeling this way about my body, blah, blah, blah. It's internalized anti-fatness. Or it's internalized anti-blackness, or it's like all of us. That's the thing, is that I think a lot of people live, not a lot of people, we are taught to live in the binary. We are taught mm-hmm. to live in the black and white. The reality of life is that it is not black or white. It is not left or right. It is not up or down. Mm-hmm. It's always somewhere in the gray, in the middle. And so I have to remind myself that even though I've done all of this work, and done all of this education, and done all of this research, and now help people do it, that I am still going to have days where I have these internalized thoughts, because they are thoughts that I was taught a very, very, very long time ago that are going to creep in, and I have to be very intentional in shutting them down, because that just is.
Can we talk for a second about how important it is to give ourselves permission to identify the internalized prejudices that we have? Because when we think that we are bad for having internalized misogyny, internalized anti-blackness, internalized anti-fatness, then we can't grow.
Right.
If I shut down myself every time I have a thought that was programmed to be inside of me by the culture that I live in,
mm-hmm.
then I can't get rid of it.
Right.
If I actually let myself observe it and say, whoa, that is not what I value. That is not what I believe. Where did that come from? Then I can actually start to push that outside of myself. But it has to start with me being okay that stuff is in there and recognizing that stuff.
Yes.
I'm not a bad person for that stuff being inside of me. I'm just a person who lives in America.
Right. And I think that's part of the reason why so many people get like rubbed the wrong way when just people in general have conversations about different systems within white supremacy, because any of the systems that you can mm-hmm. think of that are negatively impacting your life, it's all white supremacy, right? So like that's the first thing, because I feel like a lot yeah. of people think they like work separately from each other, and I'm like, oh no, baby, it's a circle. It's mm-hmm. it's all together. Yeah. If you never acknowledge something, how are you ever supposed to then learn and change it, right? I have to acknowledge that the American healthcare system is inherently anti-fat, is inherently ableist, because it is. If we don't acknowledge it, we can't change it.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
If you don't acknowledge the feelings that you have about these things, you cannot change it.
Right.
You cannot rewrite the narrative.
And I think going one level deeper than that is recognizing how we benefit from those systems. So recognizing how mm-hmm. I as a white woman benefit from white supremacy, how I as, you know, so it's, and this goes back to intersectionality, understanding how each of our identities is impacting the way that we have power in the world that we walk around, right? So I have narcolepsy, but it's largely invisible. If you look at me, it absolutely impacts my day, and I'm very disadvantaged in the capitalist system because of my narcolepsy. I will never be able to work a 9-to-5.
Right.
I'm not disadvantaged in the patriarchy, for example, for having that, except that, you know, I'm not as productive as I, quote, should be, or whatever the fuck.
Yes.
So acknowledging how those different identities impact us is so important for shedding them.
Yes, 100% agree. And that, like, sometimes there are things that are, that can be, like, that feel conflicting too, right? And that, like, I used to really pride myself on being busy, 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 busy.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm the busy, busy girl. I just come home to sleep. I blah, 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 blah. And when I realized how that was damaging me, I still had that back and forth, right? Yes, you've got this diagnosis. Yes, you've got that diagnosis. You're not lazy. You're not this. You're not that, right? Because I also got diagnosed with ADHD like a year after my fibro diagnosis. And I still now knew these things not to be true, knew them to be a part of, you know, these disorders, if you will. And yet, to your point, within a capitalistic society, I was still like, okay, but I have to be blah, 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 blah. No, you need to sit down and rest because your body is shutting down. And it's shutting down because you haven't allowed it to rest.
Yes. But there's safety in those behaviors, right?
Yes.
When you were busy, 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 you could say, look, I'm doing the things.
Right.
Like, I am a good person. I am not a lazy person.
Yep.
I am embodying all of the values in our capitalist system. So it's, I think that's the other part of it, is that, like, looking at our coping strategies and understanding how they're making us safe.
Right.
And then figuring out, how do I do something that's more aligned with my values?
Yes.
And also being really gentle with ourselves when, like, safety has to be prioritized in a certain moment.
Right. Right. Like, for instance, I think the biggest thing that I struggle with, and there's just no getting around it, I just attended, I don't know if you were, did you attend the BIPOC eating disorder conference? One of the questions that I felt was asked in a couple of presentations was, what do I do when I have a client who has gotten to a place where they feel very comfortable with their bodies? They are, you know, discovering all of these things as far as weight inclusivity is concerned. They feel good about it, but they need a knee surgery. And their doctor has said to them, I will not give you this surgery unless you lose weight. What do you do? And that's one of those really difficult times where I know 100% that the reason that that person does not want to do that surgery is connected to capitalism. Because if for whatever reason, it's a negative outcome that negatively impacts them as an individual physician, that negatively impacts the hospital isn't going to get as much money. It's all about money. It's all about money.
It's all about money. It's all about an insurance, right? We live.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's protecting themselves from a lawsuit, not seeing the whole entire person.
Right. And on top of that, understanding that our medical system does not set physicians, specifically surgeons, up for success when it comes to, actually, I won't even say specifically surgeon. Everybody, it does not set them up for success for treating fat bodies, even though majority of people live in larger bodies. So make that make sense. So, like, the reason they also feel concerned is not because they're like, this person will absolutely have a bad outcome. It's because they don't know what they're doing, because they were not taught how to do it, because fat people are not allowed to donate their bodies to science.
I didn't know that.
How does that make sense?
It doesn't make any sense. That makes zero sense.
Of course you're going to feel uncomfortable if you weren't taught how to do it. And when you you can obviously look this up for yourself. Everybody can. But there was an interview that was done. I can't remember if it was like Boston or in New York or wherever. But the medical director said that the reason that they didn't want to accept fat bodies. And it wasn't even just fat people. It was like anybody who's out of the norm. So even people who are like too tall, like over 6 feet. And I was like, that doesn't make sense either. A lot of people are over 6 feet. Like, what? It became a mix of, well, it's hard to store it.
Oh my God.
Y'all know how to store our bodies. What are you talking about? One. Two, that we really just want people to focus on the ideal. But that's not the ideal. Most people who live in America look like my body. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense. So, you know, in those really difficult, difficult times, that's when I do have to work with the client. Unfortunately, like if they need this knee surgery and I have to work with them to do it because I need them to get the help that they, to get the care that they need. But then also I know that by doing that, number one, I could be reinstating some of their anti-fatness. And number two, that their outcomes are probably actually not going to be as good as if the doctor had just done the surgery, because now they're going to be in a, they're going to be in a weaker state than when they actually started. But that is like the handcuff of that system. In the same way that sometimes I have to just sit there and let people say things that are racist in a corporate environment, because if I speak up, I might get fired and then I can't pay my rent.
Right.
So it's like, it's really, really tough to have to sink back into those things for safety. But I need people to understand that level of nuance, because that's where you do get to the point where it's not an individual morality issue of you being good or bad. It is, to your point, about just trying to stay safe within a really messed up system.
Yeah, in a system that doesn't see a whole person.
No.
And that has been incentivized, in fact, to only see parts of us.
Right. Right.
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I did find an article on that. And I will link to that in the show notes, because I think that is really important.
Yeah. I wish that my TikTok, I know I've made a TikTok video about that, and it did. Most of my videos that are like that educational, they do not get pushed onto the For You page. Because why? Then people would learn something and couldn't be distracted.
Don't do that. Don't do that. Oh my
gosh.
Oh my God. God forbid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. There are two more things that I wanted. Well, there are multiple things that we didn't get to, but I wanted to ask you about your community, how people you've surrounded yourself with have evolved over your lifetime, how that's impacted like your mental, physical health, if it has. Mm. And then also like, the knowing what you know today about the world and the systems we live in, what would you tell a younger version of yourself?
Oh,
so
God.
Those are the two that...
Those are so good.
Or we can, like...
Those are so good. Okay, I will do my best to say them as succinctly as possible, and I apologize because I haven't taken my Adderall yet.
No. Okay, we're going to relax. We're going to relax. But those are the two things that I like. There are two up above that are like wellness and thoughts on fitness goals. And I'm like, we can do those in like an IG live or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But this is the stuff that I think is like, I want to, this is the stuff I think is way better. So I'm going to ask you,
okay,
Ashantis, how has your community and the people you've been surrounded by evolved over your lifetime? And how has that impacted your mental, your physical health, your relationship with your body, your movement?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am, as I've gotten older, I am more weary of people. I'll be completely honest. Like, the more I learn about these things and even just look back on previous experiences in my life, and I'm like, oh, wait, I thought that person was being nice to me, but that person was racist. Or I thought that person was being nice to me, but that person was really me using me as their punching bag, you know? And so I am definitely more weary about adding new people to my life, because I'm like, I have to put up with a lot of BS just to get through the day. I'm not going to purposely add anybody to my life if we aren't speaking the same language, and that language is intersectionality at the end of the day. Now, with that being said, does that mean that every person that I know and love and care for speaks and understands all of these things? No, because this also isn't all, this isn't their full-time job, right? Like this, health and wellness is my full-time job. Their full-time jobs, they're working in law firms and at marketing companies and in education and in city government, you know? So like, this isn't what they do all day, but I sure as shit, anytime I think that some of the work that they are doing can be more intersectional or can provide more change and hope for the world, oh, I'm giving suggestions. I'm giving suggestions. Mm-hmm. And I also have created a lot of boundaries, right? So, you know, my friend, you won't hear any of my friends, at least not around me, talking about, oh, I don't like this part of my body, that part of my body, that part of my body, because they are consistently taking in, obviously, since they're around me, they're consistently taking in all of this information about weight inclusion. That doesn't mean that all of them feel or live within a weight inclusive lens, if you will, but they certainly are more educated on it than the people that I'm not friends with, right? You know, so it's definitely impacted a lot of things. But I try to, you know, give folks grace the best that I can. But I also know that as I've gotten older, my patience for people being blatantly ignorant has certainly gotten lower. And I'm like, in this day old age of Google, you cannot sit up here and tell me you don't know the most basic of basic things. I'm sorry. But at this point, it is because you choose not to know. If you can go and watch a documentary about true crime and you can go and do this and that, and you're choosing to ignore it. And you're probably choosing to ignore it because you can. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it doesn't impact you. I want to fill my life with people who are not choosing to ignore these things.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. And I think I was wondering if, like, your community, like, I know that for me, my community growing up was much more anti-fat, was much more diet-centric. Mm-hmm. And I have, I think, similar to you, sort of, like, blown this bubble around me that's, like, if you want to have a conversation with me, it's not going to include these topics, and it will include these principles.
Yep.
And so I'm not touched very frequently by people who are speaking negatively about their bodies because people know that that is not a conversation that I will entertain.
Right. Period. Yeah.
And so, like, those are conversations that you can have with other people, and I think I'm okay with that. Like, I understand that it happens, mm-hmm. but, like, it's not to say that I don't have those thoughts.
No.
It's not to say that I don't experience those things. It's just to say that, like, I'm not here to speak about them.
Because speaking about them in that way is adding more fuel to the fire. And,
yes.
You know? So yes. It's like, no, I'm not going to sit here and just, like, allow you. First of all, especially for my friends that are living in smaller bodies than me, or people in general that live in smaller bodies than I do, I'm not going to sit up here and watch you be like, oh, I feel so fat today. Mm-hmm. While I'm sitting there standing in your face. I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it. Because if that's how you feel about yourself, hello? You are immediately then saying anybody who's bigger than me should also feel bad, even if that's not what you mean. Mm-hmm. That is what you're saying, mm-hmm. right? So I just simply will not entertain those sayings. Or if somebody does say it around me in a space where I feel safe enough to respond, oh, I'm usually going to drop some education. I just can't help myself. Yeah. I have to be a part of the change. And that stuff is being a part of the change. Because if I can get you to feel better about your body, and then you can get your friend, and then they can get their friend, and then they can get their friend, That's part of the change.
Or if I can just get you to start thinking about it.
Right.
Like, if I can get you to start thinking about why what you said might not make sense or might not be logically consistent with your values,
mm-hmm.
then that, like, opens the door to the next step.
Right. And I think what you said is key. The individual's values,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's how I got to where I was, is that I realized that a lot of these things did not align with my values and who I was as a Black woman.
Yeah.
I think that's where a lot of these things, like grew from. And so I'm like, if you believe X, Y, and Z, and this is related to X, Y, and Z, do you see how that's maybe not aligned with your values?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I never thought about it that way before, or I never had the education to know that those things are even connected in that way.
So, knowing then what you know today, if you could go back, like, about capitalism, colonialism, patriarchy, white supremacy, ableism, anti-fat bias, all of these things,
mm-hmm.
what would you tell a younger version of Ashantis about food, body competence?
Mm-hmm. Number one, I would tell her to never watch The Biggest Loser. mm-hmm.
Oh, Ashantis, I mean, how many hours did you spend watching that? I watched a lot of episodes.
It was like a family thing.
Mm.
Like we would be like, oh my gosh, look at this thing that they did on The Biggest Loser. How can we integrate that, especially like meal wise?
Mm-hmm.
How can we integrate that into our diets? So too many hours were spent yeah. thinking that Jillian Michaels was the baddest bitch, and now if I saw her in person, baby is on. We've gonna have some words.
It just like exhausts me. It exhausts me thinking about
yes.
not, yeah, it exhausts me. Like class action lawsuit, let's go.
Yes. And the fact that it's still on actually is also exhausting. It's not on regular TV, but I recently found out there is a continuation of it on like Vizio watch free, blah, 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 blah. Like
we're
there
not
are still
advertising for this.
Yeah. No, sorry. But
oh that is
the fact that I'm like,
that's
what?
That's exhausting.
But yeah, no, I would tell her to, I mean, frankly, I would go back and tell myself to do more work around anti-racism, because I think that if I had been able to do more work around that and feeling very confident in who I was mm-hmm. as a Black person, that the mm-hmm. rest of it would have followed mm-hmm. because it's all connected.
Yeah.
Frankly. Yeah. That's what I would do. And, you know, I think it's so funny because I said earlier, right, the first time I experienced racism was in the first grade. And that was also the time where, you know, I went to a Catholic school, K through eight, there were three people of color, including me. It was me and then one other family, her, you know, she was in the same grade as me, her and her brother were also Black. We were it in the old school. And our parents had to be like, hey, y'all aren't teaching about Black History Month? And they were like, pretty much like, why would we do that? And they were like, you gonna be teaching about it this year? Because our Black kids are going to this school. And I'm so grateful.
So your parents advocated mm-hmm. for you.
And I'm so grateful for that now. But I remember being embarrassed by it then. Because I was like, oh, another reason why the kids are gonna think I'm different. Like, I'm already walking around with a name that most people can't say.
Or that people don't put in the effort, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because my name is not hard to say. It's not. It's all about effort. And so, yeah. But now I'm like, had I had the language or the ability to do education around anti-racism, I would have felt probably more inclined to stand right next to my mom and be like, and y'all are going to learn this stuff today, versus feeling a little bit more embarrassed of like, why do we have to point out more of our differences?
That makes so much sense. And I think as a white parent now, I also know that that's my responsibility,
mm-hmm.
right? That it's not on the Black parents.
Right.
In my daughter's, I mean, she's two, but it's not on Black people to be calling for that education. It's on white parents to be stepping up and doing that. And so
mm-hmm.
It wasn't fair to
right.
you, right? That was one more thing
right.
that made you different. Something that should have been obvious, right? But
yeah.
again, that's the point.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
The onus should never be on the marginalized person to do shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So no, I go back, tell her to do some work on anti-racism, and then I think really the rest would have followed.
Yeah.
And it would have saved me so much brain space.
Oh, yes. It's the brain space.
So
right?
much brain space.
It's the brain space. And that's why I think that this stuff is not about vanity. When people talk about how no. it's vain to be focused on our bodies, I always come back to, like, the safety piece and, like, the brain space piece. Mm-hmm. And it is a natural response to living in these systems for our brains to be spending this much energy
yeah.
on this stuff. And you're spending more energy mm-hmm. on it than I am. Like, there's, you know, and that's all, again, part of the hierarchy.
Exactly. Exactly. Damn white supremacy.
Yeah. One day at a time.
One day at a time is so true. So true. No, I mean, at the end of the day, like, it's just, you know, get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Get comfortable with being wrong. Get comfortable with being called out. Get comfortable.
And if you get comfortable with being called out, then you'll probably instead be called in the future. Mm. But people aren't going to approach it with love if they don't know that that's – if it's worth – you know what I mean? Putting in that effort if you're even going to receive it.
But that comes back to, like, it's not about me, right? If I'm white, it's not about me
right.
and whether or not I get called in. It's just about doing the right thing. And then who – like, who knows how the chips fall after that? But, like, if the goal is the freedom of people mm-hmm. and the goal is people in their bodies – then it's not about me and whether or not I'm
yeah
uncomfortable or getting called yeah
right or wrong yeah yeah. And I mean, overall, like, also being not afraid to take up space.
Would you tell that to your younger self?
Yeah, yeah, not to be afraid of taking up space. I definitely like be quiet. Do not, you know, question adults. Do not do this. Do not do that. It made me, going back to something you said earlier about, like, self-efficacy, that's where that stuff starts, in teaching people not to have it. Do not be afraid to take up the space that you feel like you are allowed to take up or you feel inclined to take up. Because if I continue to not take up the space that I now do, I don't even know. Like, I feel like I would be, frankly, a shell of a human.
Again, the goal, right?
It's all connected.
We're going to end on that.
If you liked this episode of the Body Competence Podcast, please give this podcast a 5-star rating wherever you listen, and consider writing a review on Apple Podcasts. Your rating and review will ensure that you never miss an episode, will help others find this community, and will help me find a sponsor to ensure the longevity of the Body Competence Podcast's mission. Come hang out at Food Bodies Families on Instagram until next week's episode.